Hello, everyone, listener and readers. I am Bob Fox from GreenAndMoney.com. Again, I have a privilege today to join with Glenn Neely, the expert in Neo Way as well as Way Series. Glenn, how are you doing?
Doing good. It's been a while since we last spoke.
Sure. And today we would like to talk about interesting subject of the market, which is gold, and that the precious metal has been a hot topic. In fact, for the last 2 years, both when it was close to 2,000 ounce last year, as well as with the recent scary drop all the way towards 1,000. Glenn, what do you think about the gold?
Well, it's really, gold's on such a large scale right now and such a large pattern that I had to go way back into the 1970s, and the data that I had, I couldn't get quite back to when the gold standard had, or when the government had locked in the value of gold at $35 an ounce, but that was a little bit before this chart started. So you have another hash mark on that scale. If you went down one more in the middle of the next hash mark, that would be $35 an ounce. It's starting on this chart around $45 or $47 an ounce. So it's off by a little bit on the beginning of wave one, but wave one should be a little bit longer, which means that that green rectangle would be a little bit longer, but still wave three is comfortably longer than that, and that would make wave five almost exactly the same length as wave one in the real world. And so we have a situation that appears as if we have relative equality of price action between waves one and five, the third wave being the extension, not by the normal 161%, but a decent decent amount. It's close to that amount. And we have no overlap between the range of wave two and the range of wave four, which is the way typical five-wave moves should develop. And we have the last wave, Roman numeral wave five, which appears to be this expanding terminal pattern, which is about as bad as it can possibly get. You know, the excitement of the gold market was pretty high over the last few years, especially when it was near $1,900. And so I was trying to figure out a wave count that would allow us to at least have some kind of top in that range. And as I went back further and further in time, I realized how serious this top could actually be. So this is the end of a five-wave move. You know, at this typical minimum, you would expect to move back down near the range of wave four. And even though that doesn't look like a big drop on this chart, on a numerical basis, not on a logarithmic basis, that's pretty substantial. We're talking about a 50% reduction in the price of gold from current levels, because wave four is somewhere in the, actually, it'd even be more than that. Let's see, 200, 300. Wave four is around $500. It may even be slightly lower than that. So that would be a massive drop in gold to get to that point.
Glenn, it's really, really interesting that your chart for this big picture of gold started around 1970s. And isn't that the time where we actually abandoned gold standard? I believe it's during the Nixon presidency. Would you explain a little bit how that affects the price of gold and also the Neo Way analysis?
Well, anytime a government sets a price on something, you know, it creates artificial, sort of an artificial market, you might say, and there was a tremendous amount of pent-up demand waiting for them to release the gold standard so gold could pursue a more natural market price. And of course, if it's at $35 an ounce and it was completely non-profitable to mine it, then nobody was probably mining much gold and people weren't interested in doing it because they weren't going to make money if they did. So since gold's an indestructible element, the amount of gold in the world basically stays the same all the time except for small amounts being added to the supply. So most of the gold in the world at that time was probably stable, and with no one having incentive to find more, it just stayed there. The minute the price started rallying, I'm sure it gave miners and entrepreneurs much greater incentive to start mining gold, and that started, you know, the next phase of the bull market. the below in 19 in the late 60s, early 70s. I think it was the late 60s when it was around $35, but I can't remember exactly. That low probably was wave two of a very large, an even larger formation going back to the beginning of the 1900s. So in the early 1900s, gold was, I think it was down around $5 to $10 an ounce at that time. This is sort of, you know, off the top of my head, I've seen a chart a long time ago put out by the Foundation for the Study of Cycles, I think, that had, you know, a multi-hundred-year chart of gold. I haven't seen that chart in a long time, but it looked like we had a first wave up, and then the government locking gold in at $35 created this super long sideways period for wave two, which went on for a few decades, and then this explosive move up from 70, from the late early 70s up to 1980, was the third wave of that bigger pattern, and then, you know, now I think we've just recently finished the fifth wave. So there could be a little bit of interpretational difference depending on how accurate my longer-term data is. And if I had that data going back to the early 1900s still, it might affect a little bit of about how I structure this pattern. So it could be that the low in the late 60s was wave two and the whole move up to 1,000 was wave three, and that the sideways action since then is wave four. Now, it might make a little more sense because the two wave on this chart is very small compared to wave four, which makes me a little uncomfortable. So if I had that long-term data, I might count this a little bit differently. But the crucial element of this chart is the movement up from around 2005, 2006, where wave four is located, Roman numeral wave four, up to wave five, because that appears to be a terminal five-wave move. It's expanding, has all the character traits of a terminal with overlap. First wave is the shortest, third wave is bigger, fifth wave is the longest. Everything's corrective. And then the recent decline was really big and sort of shocked a lot of people, sort of came out of the blue. Anytime you get a massive market move that doesn't really change the perspective on a market much, that's a really bad sign for that market. You know, gold dropped from 1900 to 1300, even though it shocked a lot of people, we really didn't see any kind of massive shift to bearishness long-term on gold. And that's a sign that this has a much longer way to go. So if you want to move down to the next chart, that one's going to blow up just the fifth wave itself, because it's crucial to know if the fifth wave is over and what kind of pattern it is and what that implies for the future. So if we go to the 6-monthly gold chart, this is just a simplified version of that super long-term monthly chart.
Yes.
So you can see the five-wave move very easily. You can see that it follows terminal characteristics. You can see wave one looks like three waves, wave three, even though there's five segments, doesn't follow the rules of impulsive pattern because there's no extended wave, there's no alternation. So that would be a corrective rally also. Wave four retraces way too much of wave three. Typically, in, you know, standard five-wave move, there's overlap between waves two and four. And then wave five clearly is also a corrective rally, a very complicated corrective rally. So this produces a terminal pattern with an expanding bias, and that fits the psychology. Anytime you're in an expanding pattern, there's a tremendous amount of doubt that occurs early on, and people keep doubting and keep doubting and keep doubting until you get close to the end. And all of a sudden they start thinking, oh, this is real, and this is, you know, going to be the beginning of something big and huge. And I remember around near the highs, I started reading about people predicting 5,000 gold, 10,000 gold. So the optimism was getting really extreme. And from being in this business for 30 years, I can pretty much tell you, the most reliable indication of a market top or bottom is anytime people start doubling, tripling, or quadrupling their upside targets, or halving, quartering their downside targets. So the minute I saw gold approaching two,
or you get to see, or you see a lot of gold commercials.
Well, that was just fuel to the fire. I mean, that just added to everything, and the real. Since the clincher for me was when I started seeing TV programs about gold diggers. Then I thought, well, that's it. I mean, that's the end of this trend. So, you know, I think that implied the popularity was so great that there was enough viewers to watch shows about people digging for gold because everybody had gold and they wanted to see their gold go up in price. So they were vested in, you know, the outcome. So the big, huge break that you see when you go back in time, that is the largest drop in gold to take place since the beginning of wave five. And I'm going to measure it real quick here. And it's actually a teeny bit larger than wave four. And if you measure from the highest point downward, it's by far the largest drop in gold we've seen on a percentage basis and an absolute numerical basis in decades. So that the magnitude of that move guarantees that this five-wave move is over. And if that five-wave move is a terminal, as I have listed, then it means that that five-wave move has to be the end of an even bigger pattern, because terminals don't happen at the end of normal situations. They only happen at the end of much larger situations. So it has to be the end of an even bigger pattern. That's why they're called. That's why I call them a terminal pattern. So it's not just the end of wave five and the end of this bigger five-wave move, but it's the end of something even larger. So that's why the forecast going forward is so bearish. That red dashed line shows we need to have complete retracement of this entire terminal pattern, and it should occur probably even faster than I have it drawn in, because on that chart, that would allow it to occur over maybe 5 years or so since the high, but it could easily be as little as 3, maybe even 4 years, somewhere in that time frame. Generally speaking, you should retrace a terminal in between 25% of the time it took to form and 50%. I found that when it's around 25%, usually it's a contracting terminal where the first wave is the longest. When it's around 50%, it's usually when the fifth wave is the longest. So I'm looking for the retracement down to the low. I'm just measuring really quick here to be a little bit sooner than what's drawn on the chart, but something close to that. So 3 to 4 years, all the way back down to about 500. And that's not quite a, 60-70% reduction in price from current levels?
Okay, my biggest question as a investor, trader, or just a general audience interesting of getting to know gold and how the price pattern is supposed to go forward is, you mentioned about, you know, this fifth wave extension terminal, it's essentially a termination of even a larger bullish pattern.
Right.
And my question is, this bearish pattern that's in a larger scale now, is that some kind of way to going down to retrace this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 wave up, or is something even more severe?
Let's go back to the long-term monthly chart, the first chart we looked at.
Yes.
So this depends on whether wave Roman numeral 2 that I have at $100 in the late 70s, it's possible that that two wave goes in the early 70s and that the whole move up was wave 3 to 1980 and everything since then is wave 4. But no matter which one of those is correct, the decline that we're in should at the very best be best case scenario retracement back to the lows of wave 4. And if this five wave move is correct, it's possible we could go back down, you know, to 100. I don't want to predict something that ridiculous because I think that's a little outlandish personally.
Right.
More likely, if I had my 100-year data instead of just 40 years of data, if I had 100, 150 years of data here on gold, most likely wave two would be at the early 1970s low, which means that this whole pattern would be the end of some larger five-wave move, so maybe wave one or wave three or wave five of a bigger pattern. And since I don't know what that is, I can't predict how big the decline is going to be ultimately. I can only say minimally what it needs to do. And minimally, it needs to get down into the range of wave four. So I think a drop to around 500 is almost certain. Possibly down into the 300 range is possible. 200 maybe, and 100 is sort of an outside chance. But I think we can easily count on it getting down to 500, no matter what the bigger picture is.
Sure. So essentially what you're saying is this is some kind of way to correction, as we know from a near whale alleyway perspective.
So it's either a wave two or it's a wave four. If it's a wave four, then we may not drop as much if it's a wave two. Either way, both of them should get at least a 500 and could go down to maybe 200 or 300.
Right, because wave two, the average is between around 50 to 61% retracement. So that should even break the wave four area, isn't that right?
It could get below the wave four low, but I don't want to, you know, since I don't know for sure what those much larger time frame structure is and how this fits into it, I'd rather just predict the part that's relatively certain. And, I mean, it's still pretty dramatic and far lower than where we are now. So,
absolutely. I understand in terms of identify, I guess the low is challenging, but still, this bull market of gold has been around since 72. So you're looking at 40 years forming this this bull market. And
right.
So for a bear market, can you enlighten us, the reader and the listener, if it is way two, what's the time frame for that? If it is way four retracement, what's the time frame for that?
Well,
so my understanding is way four is longer. So.
Well, it doesn't. No, it just depends. It doesn't matter whether it's wave two or wave four. Any correction of one bigger degree has to take more time than wave four took from high to low. So if you measure from the high of wave three to the low of wave four, you're talking about 20 years. So the minimum time for this correction will be 20 years. So we could see theoretically gold going from, you know, almost 2,000 down to 500 or 300 and then back up close to 2,000 and back down to 500 or 300. And how in the hell it would do that, who knows. But
right.
That's what the current structure would imply.
Wow. That's really shocking. Because
that's, of course, just the minimum. It could be 40 or 50 years to do all that.
Right, because, you know, majority of the masses were so in love with gold just last year when it was around $1,900 per ounce, and now you're predicting that we might be in a prolonged bear market for
right.
gold at potentially, you know, anywhere between 20 to 40 years.
Right.
That's definitely shocking for people's perspective, you know. That,
yeah,
that,
I think we should talk about how this is possible, because most people think, oh, you know, the Fed's printing money, the U.S. government's going bankrupt, there's all kinds of problems around the world. And so how in the world is this possible?
Yes, please. How in the world is this possible?
So I think we should cover that. There's several things, and I think we've talked about this a little bit in the past, that the majority of this run in the price of gold over probably the last 100 years, or at least almost 100 years, since the Federal Reserve was set up in 1913 and as the U.S. government's ability to borrow was increased more and more because of the existence of the Federal Reserve, that it's been a perpetual expansion of credit that's occurred as the U.S. has grown, as the U.S. government has grown, as the Federal Reserve has facilitated that growth. And it was back in, you know, 1913 that they set up a whole new type of banking system. In the past, even going back to Germany's hyperinflation, in the past, banks would just print money and the money in circulation would become less worth, less and less, and over time people would realize it's worthless and they would give it up and move on to something else and go back to gold standard and eventually give it up and go back to paper and back and forth. This has been going on for thousands of years. The banking system or the international cartel or whatever you want to call it, I think realized that they had to create a better system, one that wouldn't ultimately always lead to hyperinflation and the destruction of the banking system and have to restart and move back to a, you know, gold standard or some kind of standard again. So they wanted more stability, and that's when they created the U.S. Federal Reserve, and they designed it around what's called the Mandrake Principle. And this has to do with creating money out of nothing, but that also means that when you borrow money out of, you know, thin air, so to speak, when it's paid back, it disappears into nothing. So the whole structure is based on a system that constantly expands and contracts based on demand. So instead of there being real money on the line that bankers and people put up and that they're risking, they have depositors put money into their bank, and with that money, they then can start leveraging it and then lending out more and more money on a scale of almost 10 to 1, leveraging that original cash, and as demand requires it, the money supply expands, and as the economy contracts, the money supply contracts, and so it sort of grows naturally, you know, expands and contracts naturally with the growth of the economy and the contraction of the economy. Now, whether it's good or bad, that's a different issue, but that's just the way it works. So when the Federal Reserve was created, I think personally there's not much information about all the behind-the-scenes shenanigans that were probably going on, but based on studying this for 30 years, or actually more like 40 years, and thinking about it and thinking how everything works and noticing, you know, operations of banks and so forth, it's my opinion that it was a calculated collusion between the banking system and the U.S. government, that the bank said, you know, we'll lend you whatever money you want as long as you give us the exclusive right to run a central bank. And so they make money off of lending money, and the U.S. government and the people who are politicians that don't have the money but want the money to have power and access to power and the ability to spend and do things that they couldn't do otherwise, they created a an alliance. So one sort of feeds off the other. So the politicians get what they want, the U.S. government gets what they want, and the banking system gets what they want, which is interest on the money. So this system is now set up, and what's been happening over the last 100 years is as the U.S. economy has grown, the wealth of the country has grown, the amount of money on deposit with the Federal Reserve and all the banks in the country has grown, which allows this perpetual increasing leverage of the financial system. And I think that leveraging came to an end probably around 2005, 2006. And that's when the real estate market started to crash. We had the Great Recession starting, and the price of gold topped out, about 2 years ago?
Yeah.
So I think that was more on a speculative binge based on the assumption that we're on the old style of hyperinflationary monetary system, but we aren't. So that people don't realize that once you're in this Mandrake structured system, that you only can borrow money into existence and you can only then pay it off or write it off back out of existence. So this means that you always eventually get a contraction back to close to zero or potentially zero or towards zero. So we've gone through this massive expansion for 100 years. I think now based on wave theory, we're going to go through a contraction for 20, 30, maybe 40 years that started in 2000. We're only 10 years through this 20, 30, 40-year period. And during this period, we should see a continuous contraction of the economy, a continuous contraction of the amount of money in circulation, which is why the U.S. dollar has been going up, because it's becoming worth more and more as more debt's being paid off. You have the correlated event of the baby boomers reaching their golden years and getting past the point that most people buy their most expensive homes and spend the most money, which is around age 46. So most baby boomers are in their mid to late 50s, so they're now past the point where they need their largest home. They're starting to downsize. They're starting to pay off debt. They're starting to, live on less. So all this is going to cause a perpetual and probably decade contraction in the money supply and credit, which will cause an increase in the value of the dollar, which is directly correlated to the value of gold. So as the dollar increases because fewer dollars are in circulation, the amount of the value of gold has to decrease in relation to that increasing dollar. And so that's the explanation and logic that I have to explain how it's possible that that second chart, which is a 6-monthly gold chart, can actually pan out over time, because we're actually going to go through a massive deflationary period where there's a massive contraction in the money supply and a massive increase in the value of the U.S. dollar. And I think this has already begun. And once the Fed stops spending so much or stops loaning the U.S. government and buying bonds on the open market, once that process comes to an end, then all this has to start reversing. What they're trying to do right now is prevent the deflation that they know is coming. They're trying to delay it as long as they can, hoping that things will get better before it's too late. But there will be a point where the U.S. government can't borrow any more money because the open markets in foreign countries won't give it to us anymore, and the whole thing will have to stop. And once it's clear that that has to stop, all this will start going in reverse, and we'll see a massive contraction in the money supply, debts being paid off, written off, massive decline in gold as a result of the dollar going up in value. And that's how I see this whole thing panning out. I don't know how bad it's going to be for individuals. Did we talk a while back about how this may be a sort of a new world kind of phenomenon where the rich
we
are
did. Yeah, we kind of talk about this is going to be the greatest equalizer in the last, 50 to 100 years, because due to the value of gold and the inflation, the richer gets richer and the poor gets poorer because most
rich people... But that's in an inflationary environment.
Right. Most rich people tend to have, appreciable asset, while
right.
the poor people don't. But in this case, because it's going to be in a deflationary environment, most appreciable assets suddenly become a depreciable asset.
Right, they
so,
become a burden instead of an asset. They become a liability. So
right.
that's the upside-down world that's probably going to happen as deflation takes stronger and stronger hold and as the U.S. government is unable to borrow more and more because we're, our credit rating has been declining, it's going to get worse, and that the minute you get to a certain point, people just aren't going to lend us the money, or they're going to lend it to us at higher interest rates, which will automatically start causing huge burdens for the U.S. government. We're starting to see some of the impact of this, I think, already. A long time ago, I had done an interview probably 3 or 4 years ago, where I'd mentioned briefly that I thought that because of the wage structure, the economic circumstances, being in a long, prolonged correction and deflation on the way, that we'd start experiencing for the first time cities, states, and regions of the U.S. Starting to go bankrupt. And we're just now starting to see this a few years after I predicted that Detroit has, filed for bankruptcy.
Right.
I think California's probably coming, and maybe a few other states will come along the way, and a lot of municipalities and cities and towns will probably have to do the same thing. The reason this is going to occur is because as the value of the dollar goes up, if this deflation period occurs, as I think it will, all of a sudden, all the contracts that are written with absolute numerical terms will be impossible to pay off. So if someone buys a house for $100,000, but now the dollar is worth twice as much, so that $100,000 is twice as hard to pay off. And on the open market, the house is only worth $50,000 because the dollar is worth twice as much. You're going to have a whole bunch of people with a whole bunch of contracts that they're not going to want to deal with anymore because they're going to realize they're upside down, they're never going to get out, and they're just going to want to walk away. And that's
right.
exactly the situation that the Federal Reserve is trying to prevent. They really, in my opinion, they're not concerned about the U.S., citizens, they're not concerned about the U.S. economy, despite everything they say. They're really concerned about saving contracts that all the banks around the world, and at least in the U.S., have, which will be destroyed or at least people won't actually, what's the word I'm looking for, won't pay off their debt because they realize that it's just not worth it anymore. They're trying to avoid that, and eventually they won't be able to stop it anymore. So that's what I think is coming, and that's the reason I think they're doing it, and it's going to eventually backfire, or at least, they can't stop the eventual phenomenon. They're just doing as long as they can, and then we're going to all, at least those who own lots of land and property and so forth, they're going to suffer a great deal. Those who don't probably won't hurt them a lot. It may even help them a lot.
Well, Glenn, that goes back to another question then. The reason why the stock market has reached all-time high and everybody seems to feel like things are getting better, even some of the area for the housing price has started to go up.
Right.
But those confidence is based on we have the federal government, both the physical and the monetary policy, to continue to pump all those money into the system.
Right.
But what you're saying is, there's going to come to a day, which is actually sooner than later than we think, in the next few years, that suddenly we cannot borrow from other countries through Treasury at a low price.
Not the rate we've been borrowing, and clearly these countries and borrowers are going to probably start making the U.S. government adhere to more stringent financial austerity measures, just like we've done with other countries, are going to start doing it to us, because a lot of countries have, you know, debt in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to be forced to stop having all these free government giveaway programs. Food stamps will be hurt. Welfare will be, you know, reduced. Everything across the board for decades, we'll see reductions in the government everywhere. And that's going to be the process. There's going to be no way to stop it, in my opinion.
But don't you think that it's going to cause even a bigger panic compared to 2008, when everybody thinks that, you know, the banking system is collapsing, but the U.S. government is the final backstop? They're coming to say, you know what, we're going to borrow you billions of dollars to do certain things to get yourself back together. But what you're saying is the U.S. government might not be there at this time.
Right.
Go ahead.
They won't be able to help probably the way they have in the past. And I don't necessarily think the banking system is going to collapse. I think that being a banker is not going to be profitable like it was for so long. And then there's not going to be any way out. They won't be able to get bailed out this time around. So they're actually going to...
Hello?
It has its day, right? So I think their time is coming. And it's just a matter of all these factors coming into play. I think it's possible also that some of the foreign countries, these emerging markets, are not doing too well right now. China's slowing down, a lot of the, you know, India's slowing down. That if that gets to where their growth gets close to zero, that could really start to impact things. And it may even be that China suffers quite substantially due to mass central planning, overbuilding. I don't know if you saw the recent 60 Minutes show.
Yes.
They were showing how in China, they have entire cities that were built from scratch and nobody's there and nobody came to buy anything. It's just they assumed people were going to move to this city and they just didn't. Just huge, massive ghost towns, ghost cities, not ghost towns, with skyscrapers and everything. So
Right. They
could be on the verge of what we experienced in 2008. And if they go through that, that's going to drastically impact us, because they may not be able to lend us the money that they've been lending us, along with foreign countries. So it could be a more international downturn where everyone suffers, not just some, like Cyprus and some of the smaller countries.
Well, with everything you just said, I mean, which is kind of scary, because when China gets to slow down to 6% or 7%, everybody in the United States is freaking out. But what you're saying is, it's possible that their GDP growth can go below 5%. I mean,
yeah,
that
maybe
would be
go close to zero.
Yeah, that would be a shock to the global stock market,
I'm sure. Because that's the biggest country in the world. So,
right.
That would definitely change things a little bit. So there's a lot of changes coming. I'm not looking for the collapse of the banking system. I'm not looking for, you know, collapse in the economy, like not the end of the world. It's not going to be like the Great Depression. But I do think it's going to get pretty bad again, and that it's going to happen potentially pretty fast. I'm not sure if it'll be as fast as the crash from 2007 to 2009. It's probably going to be slower, but it could be longer, more drawn out, and more painful to more people.
Yes, yes. Well, Glenn, I guess the best way to navigate through this very challenging time is to hopefully utilize your expertise in the way analysis to foresee what might come in the gold market and the stock market. I guess right now, for the next few years, the key is capital preservation. Isn't that right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that just having cash will be almost like an investment, because if I'm right about the deflation, if you held $100,000 in cash, it might be worth $200,000 in spending power in a few years. So that could be the only really good investment, where everything else might be declining in value. So it could be a very strange upside down world for a while. And I personally have, you know, most of my wealth is all in cash right now, or in very short-term kind of investments and things that I can control easier, because I'm worried about this deflationary period.
Sure. Well, Glenn, do you have anything to add in terms of gold?
That's it. I appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
Yeah,
we'll talk
thank you.
Or two.
Yeah, thank you very much, Glenn.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, bye.